Radio Prague News.
Anti-corruption police have opened criminal proceedings in the case of a dubious tender awarded by the previous government during the Czech EU presidency. President Václav Klaus says the EU should get involved in Macedonia's name dispute with Greece. And five canvases from Alfons Mucha's cycled Slav epic have been moved to Prague. Anti-corruption police have opened criminal proceedings in the case of a dubious tender awarded by the previous government to the company PromoPro during the Czech EU presidency in the first half of 2009. The tender was purportedly the responsibility of the organizational team led by current Defense Minister Alexander Vondra. Mr. Vondra said at the end of January that he had not signed and had not even known about the contract with the company, which provided audiovisual equipment in the amount of €500 million, or roughly six times their worth. Charges of mismanagement of public funding carries a sentence of 2 to 8 years imprisonment. The European Union should get involved in Macedonia's dispute with Greece over its official name, President Václav Klaus told reporters on Tuesday. Speaking after his meeting with Macedonian President Dorje Ivanov, Mr. Klaus said he understands Macedonia's interest in acceding to the EU and that Greece should not oppose it. He said he warned his Balkan counterpart that acceding to the EU meant entering a complex institution rather than a paradise, but allowed that it was crucial for Macedonia's future. Greece is opposed to Macedonia using the name Republic of Macedonia, saying this name refers exclusively to a region in northern Greece. It insists on Skopje using the name former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, under which it is also registered with the United Nations. President Klaus also took the opportunity on Tuesday to weigh in again on the pending mass resignation of doctors protesting salary levels, saying that the health ministry should make no more concessions. He said he fully supports Health Minister Leos Heger in his negotiations with the doctors' unions, and that further concessions were not what the people of the Czech Republic wanted either. The president also thanked doctors and nurses who continued to work instead of making threats. The State Security Council is meeting today with regional governors to discuss emergency plans for March 1st, when 3,800 doctors are set to quit if their salaries are not raised to meet Western European standards. Five canvases from Alfons Mucha's cycle, the Slav Epic, have been moved to Prague from their longtime abode in Moravský Krumlov. The canvases have been rolled up since 4 months ago, when the whole cycle was to be moved. Municipal elections allowed a heated debate between the cities to subside for a time, and Prague has reportedly promised the town it can have the paintings for the summer tourist season. However, the director of the City Gallery Prague said the paintings were being moved according to the instructions of Prague for an autumn exhibition of the entire Slav epic. In sports news, Chelsea goalkeeper Petr Cech was named the Czech Republic's Footballer of the Year 2010 at a Prague ceremony on Monday. It is the third time in a row that Cech has won the trophy and the fourth time overall. The 28-year-old Czech international, who capped 78 approaches for the national squad, finished ahead of Arsenal midfielder and Czech team captain Tomáš Rosický and Atletico Madrid defender Tomáš Ujfalusi. FIFA president Sepp Blatter and Portuguese legend Eusebio were present at the awards ceremony to congratulate the winner and to honor Czech legend Josef Masopust on the occasion of his 80th birthday. In 1962, Masopust scored the opening goal in the World Cup final between Czechoslovakia and Brazil. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be mostly sunny, with highs of around 5 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, broadcasting from the Czech Republic with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up today, we look at a massive hole in financing a road tunnel under Prague that has already come in a third over budget. Government parties propose to cut pension payments to top members of the former communist regime and its secret police and transfer proceeds to their opponents. And in today's feature, we relive the agony of kidnapped Czech technicians during Angola's Cold War proxy civil war.
They promised they wouldn't kill us. They said, to kill you doesn't suit to our political program. But as you know, political programs change from time to time, so we were worried, of course.
All that coming up, so stay tuned. It was not that long ago that the previous leadership at Prague City Hall assured the public that the massive Blanka Tunnel under construction in the capital would be finished on time and within its 26 billion crown budget. So it must have been a rude awakening for the newly installed at City Hall, including new mayor Bohuslav Svoboda, to learn nothing could be further from the truth. The 6.3-kilometre tunnel will cost at least 10 billion crowns more than previously expected. What's more, its completion is now likely to go heavily over schedule. Jan Wellinger has the story.
Representatives at City Hall can't be happy over the revelation that Blanka Tunnel, a massive structure connecting major parts of the city, will cost nowhere near its original price and will likely go over schedule by years. Originally, the project was to have been completed by November 2011, and the bill was 26.9 billion crowns. Now things look very different, above all, a good deal more expensive. On Sunday, here's what Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda had to say on Czech TV.
The cost of Blanka is going up by roughly 10 billion crowns, a huge sum, and we have to analyze how this happened. We are analyzing the original plans to find out where costs went up and why, and to what extent they are justified. We have to also meet with the developer to discuss the whole problem. The jump from the original cost is so high that there is no way the city can pay it.
One solution, Mayor Svoboda said, would be to scratch areas of the project, but afterwards he admitted in a subsequent interview that the city's contract with the developer Metrostav was so poorly written, it essentially gave the company a free hand in adding extra work and costs. Among the 50 or so items in the construction project which have boosted the bill considerably, new broader sidewalks, 59 million, tram route renovation, 18 million, and the lion's share, boosts in the cost of engineering work and materials, reinforced concrete construction, an additional 529 million, and the boring of the tunnel itself, an extra 737 million, according to Czech TV. However, it is not only the cost, but the manner in which the details were uncovered that are fairly unsettling. Apparently, these were found through recent analysis commissioned by Deputy Mayor Karel Březina. Otherwise, presumably, the gross overspending would have remained unknown. The mayor said simply on Monday that the control mechanisms in the case of the Blanka project had failed. On the other hand, no one having a clear idea of what was going on seems almost hard to believe, and some are skeptical. Politician Tomáš Hudeček from the party Topo 9 said that someone must have known long in advance that the budget had grown. City Hall is now in a tricky position, negotiation with Metrostav of where things will go from here. So far, the developer, not surprisingly, has insisted it will be paid for work completed. But the city needs some kind of a compromise solution, or it will spend an additional 19 billion to the 19 already paid. One possibility to help reduce the costs, the mayor suggested, was for the work to be stretched out over a longer period to give the city time to foot the bill. Under such a scenario, it's possible that drivers may only use Blanka Tunnel for the first time in 2014.
Jan Wellinger with that big black hole in the Blanka Tunnel budget. The Czech government wants to correct some of the injustices inherited from the communist regime. More than 20 years after the fall of communism, coalition leaders agreed to a plan to slash the retirement benefits of former communist security service officers and high-ranking communist party officials. The funds should be used to increase the pensions of opponents of the former regime. Jan Richter has the story.
Thousands of Czechs who stood up against the communist regime faced persecution, ranging from imprisonment to harassment on a daily basis. Those who voiced their disagreement with the 1968 occupation of Czechoslovakia were frequently fired from their positions and struggled to find even the lowest-paying jobs. These people often get very modest retirement benefits that reflect their low earnings in the past. Former high-ranking communist officials, along with ex-police and military officers, as well as agents of the secret police, landed nice pensions, as their pay packets were well above average. Czech politicians have long been talking about repairing this historical injustice. But in 2009, a bill put forth by a group of Civic Democrat MPs was rejected by the lower house of parliament. In August 2010, Prime Minister Petr Nečas was skeptical about such move, saying it would be repealed by the Constitutional Court. But he's changed his mind. Inspired by similar Polish legislation, coalition leaders now say they would like to go ahead with the plan. The bill is sure to meet with fierce opposition from those affected by the law and from the current Communist Party. Social Democrats, however, are more likely to find common ground with the coalition once all the details are cleared. Lubomir Zaorálek is a senior Social Democrat MP.
This concrete proposal is against the Constitution because I can't imagine that now we will seek maybe the old member of the Communist Party and maybe we will cut the pensions of these members and maybe to use this fund as fundament of a similar solution. I am sure it's against Constitution and I would like to look for different solution and maybe to find a way how to compensate dissidents.
A group of coalition MPs will now work out the details of the new legislation. A bill on anti-communist resistance, which will be debated in the lower house later this week, should determine who qualifies as an opponent of the regime. It's not clear, however, how to decide whose pensions should be slashed and how. Former dissident Jan Urban appreciates the effort, but says it's taken too long to table the proposal.
It took more than 20 years for this proposal to become a part of politics. And I think that it's near to insulting to remember that those who suffered the most under communism, the hundreds of thousands of political prisoners from the 50s, are already dead. So definitely it's a good move, symbolic move more than anything else, defining or redefining justice, but it's really too little too late.
Former dissident Jan Urban, ending that report by Jan Richter. This week's edition of Czech History looks back to the year 1983 and to Africa, where 66 Czechoslovak men, women and children were held hostage in the Angolan Civil War, some for over a year, and forced on a trek of almost 3,000 kilometres. Here's Christian Favi with today's Czech History.
Angola. In 1977, the country had just ended a war of independence from Portugal, and civil war was breaking out, a Cold War proxy conflict in which the American-backed UNITA movement was pitted against the Marxist MPLA, which had the support of the Soviet Union, Cuba, and Czechoslovakia. The Czechoslovak government had agreed to aid the fledgling communist state by helping resurrect and run the Angola Cellulois and Paper Company in the area of Alto Catumbela, which had been left derelict after the Portuguese withdrew.
At the beginning of July, it will have been 30 years when I left for Angola.
In 1981, Lumir Novotny was a 31-year-old chemical engineer looking to apply his language skills somewhere in the world. That place ended up being the Alto Catumbela factory, where he helped train the Angolans to manage and maintain the facility.
We were informed that there are some groups. It is the same everywhere. After some revolution, there always exist some isolated groups of bandits or something. But Alto Catumbela itself was guarded very closely. So after a year, I came home for a holiday, and on my return journey to Angola, I took my family with me.
There were 66 Czechoslovaks in Alto Catumbela, including the specialists' wives and 21 children, a doctor and two nurses. Also with them was Nuno Borges da Silva, a Portuguese Angolan who had remained in the country in spite of the revolution and was the director of the factory. He also led the factory's powerful defense militia, which he told Czech television he thought would deter the interest of the roving UNITA battalions.
Nobody expected that UNITA could attack Alto Catumbela, frankly speaking, because UNITA was to also, according to the information we had, very scared to attack Altkutumbela because they didn't know how many people we had, armed people, and how much force we had inside. Well, they could attack, we knew. They could attack. But we never were convinced that they could win the battle with us.
But on March 12, 1983, the information that the director and his militia had proved to be wrong.
Ministerstvo zahraničních věcí Československé socialistické republiky bylo splnomocněno informovat, že v neděli 13. března byly v oblasti města Altkutumbela v Angolské lidové republice protivládními skupinami UNITA zadrženi českoslovenští občané.
We had all together until midnight, me and the Czechs drinking beer, etc. in the club, and then at 5 o'clock in the morning started the attack. Actually, the attack with 1,500. And very, very well armed, very well, with very good weapons, the very sophisticated organization, etc., with good leaders as well, good generals. And then, of course, they attacked us as well with three fronts. They came in from three sides, and it was very, very well prepared.
Spolu s nimi byli zadrženi i jejich rodinní příslušníci, včetně dětí.
It was very unpleasant and. For example, when you speak to some or with someone, and after 10 minutes you see him dead lying over a bush, so, and there were many others sad happens, and then they came to our neighborhood, and they took us from houses, and they gathered us to a crowd and. We were driven through the neighborhood and out to the forest. And then next day we start the march.
Viva Africa! Viva, Viva Angola! Viva! Viva UNITA!
The group was now in the hands of the death-defying guerrilla general Jonas Savimbi, who led the inexhaustible anti-communist movement in Angola for 27 years. Trained militarily by the Chinese, but groomed politically by the Americans, Savimbi was considered a master tactician, but what his strategy was for the abduction of the Czechs and Slovaks is not entirely clear. Ultimately, it served as a show of force that won UNITA some name recognition internationally, but the commander who attacked the factory has himself said that the only aim was to destroy the infrastructure and move on. His intelligence had reported only 8 foreigners in the compound. When he found himself stuck with nearly 100 Czechoslovaks and Portuguese, the first thing that occurred to him was that it would be easier just to kill them. Anti-Savimbi music of the Angolan Civil War. Savimbi had the Czechoslovaks marched north. Initially, they were followed by MPLA and Cuban soldiers, who allegedly wanted to attack in spite of the presence of civilians, but were ordered to stand down by none other than Raul Castro, after discussing the situation with Moscow and Prague. Savimbi notified the government that he would have the captives killed if they were attacked.
They promised they wouldn't kill us. They said, to kill you doesn't suit to our political program. But as you know, political programs change from time to time, so we were worried, of course.
The long march that ensued, however, was so long, over 1,300 kilometers, through remote terrain, and so arduous that it did take the life of one of them, Jaroslav Navratil, a 37-year-old Slovak. Overcome physically and in a poor psychological state, he was being carried in a stretcher by the soldiers on their heads when they tripped, and he fell to the ground, striking his head on a stone. He was buried in a mound in the bush. Meanwhile, others were suffering unfathomable hardships that could easily have ended up the same way. Eva Janechkova had serious hip problems and had had both of her hip joints operated on. She had joined her husband in Angola with the expectation of getting a rest.
My husband helped me. He carried me on his back when he could. He pushed me or pulled me up the hills. I was remembering the war films you see on television and how people who couldn't manage the marches were mercilessly shot. For the first half of the march, there were no stretchers, and so the Angolans carried me on their backs. But my condition after those operations was such that I had horrific pain even when I was being carried. I remember crying, and when I couldn't take the pain anymore, I asked them to shoot me. I just couldn't take it anymore.
A žádala jsem, aby mě zastřelili, že prostě to už nejde.
Many of the hostages had no more with them than the clothes on their backs. Soon they were covered in hair and body lice, the only remedy for which was to put their clothes into anthills, where the ants would pick them clean. They often marched for hours before they could drink, and then only from whatever source was available. But all described the worst problem as being the corn mash that was practically their only sustenance. Lumir Novotny again.
It was such horrible food. When you have eaten it up, then you felt aches in your stomach. But you could choose, either I will die or I will eat it and I will survive. So the worst feeling was, you know, if you are not given any food, then you change your priorities of life, you know. And believe me, one priority is only the food. If you are extremely hungry, then you are able to do nearly everything, you know. But during the march, your output of energy was so exhaustive, it filtered a bit the psychologic problem. So you have to walk and walk and day and night. And if they ordered you to stop, we all fell down.
This went on for roughly 100 days, after which time the hostages were put on lorries and moved another 1,500 kilometers to their final destination. But even then tensions were high, as Slovak František Zlocha recalled in a Czech television documentary about the ordeal.
A ten jeden kolega vyslovil, že a stejně všichni chcípneme.
One of our colleagues said at that point, we are all going to die anyway. One of the women got such a shock from that we didn't know how to console her. I grabbed him by the neck and shoved him up against a tree and swore at him in a horrible way that if he ever did that again, I'd break his jaw.
Že ještě raz, až to budem počuť, takže mu rozbijem jako ústa.
The 21 children experienced the ordeal altogether differently. Lumir Novotny's daughter Gabriela was 4 years old when she was on the march and indeed remembers different problems than the adults.
I remember one night we were crossing a wild river and it was quite deep, and my father carried me on the shoulders.
On his shoulders, yeah.
And I was sleepy and I started crying and shouting that I, you know, he suffered because the stream was pushing him, and because he's also quite short, so the water level was high. And I blamed him and that my feet are wet. So then he puts me to his friend's shoulders because he was taller. Really, I perceive it from different point of view. My older brother, he was 7 at the time. He told me that he felt everything like a big adventure.
Ve zvláštním letadle vyslaném československou vládou přiletělo dnes v podvečerních hodinách na ruzínské letiště v Praze 17 žen.
Once the group reached their final destination, nearly 3,000 kilometers from where they began, the women and children were freed, along with 7 men who the Red Cross found too weak to remain.
Který je v cestě z Kinshasy do Prahy doprovázel a na palubě podrobil zevrubné prohlídce, uspokojivý.
The remaining 20 men, however, stayed for another year, and while initially they received better food and medical attention, the conditions in which they were kept were extremely trying. Lubomír Sazeček was one of the hostages and has written 3 books about those 465 days of his life.
There was every kind of animal in the huts we were given, cockroaches covering the walls, fleas, scorpions. Snakes got into at least half of the huts. There were lions, elephants, hyenas, and the animals would drink from the same water holes that we did.
During that year, it was at the beginning was quite horrible, because 2 months after the departure of the first group, we couldn't speak to each other. We were kept isolated, only 2 men in one hut. And we were guarded very closely, and we couldn't speak to our neighbors. It took about 4 months, and just before the Christmas came some high rank officer to announce that we were authorized to speak to each other only on Mondays. They wanted us being afraid of animals, for example. You could hear lions at night. We saw a herd of elephants coming, and the elephants completely ate the roof from our dining room. Yes, elephants came at night and ate the roof, all grass from the roof. It was terrifying, and sometimes at night, you know, between 2 and 3 hours, a lion woke you up by such a lion, just like in zoo, you know.
The diplomatic work behind the eventual release of the remaining 20 men deserves a chapter unto itself. Suffice to say here that after more than a year of resisting any compromise, Savimbi made one last-ditch effort to get some benefit out of his prize, as former Deputy Foreign Minister Stanislav Svoboda remembers.
Savimbi prohlásil, že bude požadovat 300 tisíc dolarů.
Savimbi demanded $300,000 to cover food and board for the year they were holding our men captive. I told him that we could discuss that option, but that in that case we would announce that we had paid a ransom for our captured citizens, and that at that moment UNITA could change from a national liberation movement into a pack of bandits who had kidnapped our citizens for ransom. Savimbi thought about that and said, fine, I'll free them unconditionally. I only ask that none of them return to our country for the duration of the conflict.
The 20 hostages returned to Czechoslovakia on June 23, 1984. Jonas Savimbi was shot to death in 2002 in combat with government troops, and with that, the Angolan civil war came to an end. The current Czech ambassador describes relations with the country as excellent. Angola is a priority country for Czech developmental aid, focusing on food sustainability, education, infrastructure, and healthcare. Bygones are bygones, also for Lumir Novotný.
I understood their position, their situation. Perhaps if you were in their shoes, you would behave the same as they did. As they did, because they were soldiers and they had to obey, to listen to their commander. I am not hostile, I don't feel any hostility to them. And if there is a possibility to go back to Angola, I would go.
Christian Favi there with that look at the harrowing experience almost 30 years ago. That just about wraps up Radio Prague's English programme for today. All our programme and others are available at our internet address radio.cz. If you've got any comments, we're always pleased to hear them. You can contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. From me, Chris Johnston, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening.